So if these two passages are about finding wisdom for our lives, what is that wisdom? Where is it to be found? How does it work? Well, the answer to that question takes me not to the Valley of Elah, where David and Goliath are ready for this gigantic confrontation. Nor does it take me to the Lake of Galilee, where disciples are in the midst of a big confrontation with a giant windstorm. Rather, the place I want to begin is downstairs in Barrett Hall, where a group of very faithful souls are confronting in a very particular way some of the giants and storms of our day: poverty, discrimination, and bigotry. Things that threaten to tear our society completely apart. So let's explore that one. And I want to do it through the eyes of the Thanksgiving angels, who had a planning meeting just a little over a week ago. They're planning the Thanksgiving distribution, which is still many months off. But it's a distribution for 1,500 families, frozen turkeys and all the fixings. They need to raise, they're estimating, about $27,000 over the summer. And so 20 people from 18 different congregations, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, and some others, all came together seeking to deepen and strengthen the web of connection out to those who live on the margins. Those who are judged, those who are shamed, and perhaps worst of all, those who are so often rendered invisible to all the rest of us. So that at least for one day there in November, all of them will be welcomed and extended the dignity and the grace and the abundance that most of us can pretty much take for granted. We have enough food to eat. We're treated with some respect and dignity. On that day, that gets extended. It's something small, it's only for a day, and yet at the same time, it feels absolutely immense to me. Now, the reality of all this is Barrett Hall, back in 1930, was not constructed to do such things. That was not the vision for Barrett Hall, to have 1,500 folks, sometimes with kids and all, streaming through all in one day with mountains of food, so all of them get like 20 pounds of food plus the frozen turkey. If you just think about the logistics for a moment, it's rather immense. And so the line stretches outside, either this way up to South Street or this way up to South Street. And if you think about it for a moment, late in November, to have all those folks standing outside for hours on end, the elderly, the frail, the sick, the disabled, lots of children, they get wet, they get cold, they shiver from all the winds that come blowing from the west up these streets and alleys. And so the Thanksgiving angels are this amazingly adaptable group. Even though they've done this six times before and kind of have the whole procedure in place, they continue to try to tweak it and change it to make it work better. And so this year, when I was reading through their minutes, they've reorganized the whole way Barrett Hall is going to be set up. They've moved some things out, they've moved other things around, and they're going to try to get the line to come snaking through Barrett Hall so more people can be inside. They're also getting some donations of tents. They're going to have hand warmers. They're going to have a heater. And like in prior years, I'm sure I and other clergy will be outside handing out hot coffee for those who are still out there. I was impressed, reading through the minutes, at this flexibility of the group. Because you take 18 different faith communities that have their histories and their traditions and their ways of looking at things, the ways of doing things, and you put them all together and say you all got to agree on one strategy, and the strategy has to be adequate for 1,500 people and thousands and thousands and thousands of pounds of food, and everybody has their opinions and ideas and things go all over the map. Much like that old tradition of herding cats. Everybody has their opinion to try to deal with this daunting task. But because of the persistence of people like Mary Wheat and Mary Rentz and many others, and this deeper resource that I want to talk about, this deeper resource, I'm confident that the foe will be vanquished, that stillness will come, that Thanksgiving angels will make this whole thing happen once again. Because they instinctively know some of the wisdom that's embedded in these scriptures this morning. That deeper resource. So let's explore that. In 1 Samuel, the young shepherd boy David responds to the crisis of the day, Goliath, in a deeper, different way. The armor and the swords and the weaponry that are the usual implements used by the Philistines and the Israelites and everybody else to do battle, that's how you do it. That's not how David's going to do it. Instead, he goes just with his shepherd's outfit out beyond the ranks, and the wadi is a dried up stream bed, because if you think about Judah, it's a very dry, deserty-like place. All these dried up stream beds, and even here in the Berkshires, when there's dried up stream beds, there's all these little flat round stones. And so he finds five smooth stones sitting there in plain sight, probably right there at his feet, and those become his secret weapon, if you will, combined with his slingshot to vanquish the foe. An unexpected victory that vanquishes the Philistines right off. If you keep reading through chapter 17, they run all the way to probably to Egypt. But the purpose of the story, part of it is to be entertaining and just kind of a, almost like a superhero kind of story. And yet, underneath that, there is this wisdom being offered us. It's saying, look, see, focus more deeply. See what's going on right in front of you. Don't be intimidated by the 10-foot monster over there or all this gear that you got to wear. Just pay attention to right what's at your feet. Because it may be that what you absolutely need is already here right in front of you if you have the eyes to see. That's what this story really is telling us. And that gets confirmed for me because in the gospel lesson, entirely different story, and yet it's the same story. The disciples are struggling against an immense foe, a great windstorm coming across the Lake of Galilee, and Jesus is asleep in the stern of the boat. They rebuke Jesus. They want him to wake up. Come join us. Get your hands on an oar. Help us to pull. Help us to pull to fight this battle in the usual way. Because the way is you fight with the oars against the water and see if you can survive. But instead, Jesus wakes up, probably wipes his eyes and looks around and sees the whole thing differently. He sees deeper resources. Jesus being Jesus, he just stands up and he speaks a word of peace into the very eye of the storm. And the storm calms, and everybody's in awe. Who is this? Who is this that has such power? Which is a good question. That leads one direction, Jesus being the Christ, the Son of the living God. But if you read chapter 4, the whole point of the chapter has been Jesus telling them this series of parables, saying that the power of the Spirit, the breath of God, is within you. That mustard seed of faith is within you. Don't miss it. He's been telling them, you are to embody what I am doing. Which then gets acted out in the story. The disciples are not to be engulfed by the storms of life. They aren't just to look for Jesus. Where did Jesus go? Where did you go? No, Jesus is here. And they are to speak, to breathe peace, shalom, into the very heart of the world. It's the disciple call. They're to do it. That's what you're to be in awe of. That's the power. It's within us. When we listen more deeply, go more deeply. The wisdom is that there's more right here than we realize. So, bringing things up to date, our world right now is in a lot of trouble. We have climate change marching its way along. Things are melting, changing, wreaking havoc more and more across the globe. Many of the conflicts that are happening, that are rising up, if you look deeply enough, have climate. Even the Syrian struggle had a lot of climate issues and drought and desertification that got all that going. Climate change is happening. We're not seeing it. We're in trouble. Here in our country, income inequality has gotten so extreme. The recent tax cut just made that worse. That's why we're going to have 1,500 families. And now we have a trade war going on. Who knows what that will bring? The rise of authoritarian leaders in many countries and many signs of authoritarianism right here in our country. And then the immigration crisis, as Judy's saying, those children on the border who are being brutalized, families, a lack of repentance around that, a defensiveness. Detention camps are becoming internment camps. So there we have it. And we're, if you're like me, we're all set for battle. I can vent, I can rage. We all are arguing. You turn on the radio or the TV, there's all this noise. People get defensive and defend this, that, or the other, accusing, attacking. It's as if we are in the Valley of Elah, and all the noise of the armor and the swords and the rattling and who's going to win and how's this going to work, we're all getting ready for a giant battle. Or we're on the Lake of Galilee and there's a storm is going and our boat feels small and we're all pushing in different directions, trying to survive. Where is God? Where is Jesus? Where did you go? What a friend we have in Jesus. Yes, yes, where are you, my friend? And then this word of wisdom comes from these ancient stories that offers us a pathway that says, go deeper, go deeper. Don't stay on the surface. Don't fight all this the usual way. These are not usual times. It needs a different, deeper response. Can you look more carefully? Can you respond in a more heartfelt way? Can you find a way to speak peace, to speak truth, to speak transformation into the heart of this world right now? That's where these passages are headed. That's what they want us to hear. And that, to me, is the secret weapon of the Thanksgiving angels. Instead of arguing and fighting about social policy, which all needs to be done, and yet, instead of doing that, people coming together in a deeper way. And instead of judging who's worthy and who's unworthy, who's in and who's out, who's welcome, who's not welcome, to all these 1,500 families. Instead, the Thanksgiving angels make this very simple move that is profound and biblical. They just simply try as best they can from all their different perspectives, but this is kind of the unifying focal point, just simply to see the person that's in front of them. To see the poor, the vulnerable, the weak, the needy. To see them, to see this person in all their poverty, vulnerability, neediness, their humanity. And if you look closely enough into the face of anybody, but in the face of a poor person, when you see them deeply enough, then you begin to sense your own poverty, your own vulnerability, your own neediness. Because, look, folks, we are all finite. We are all vulnerable every day. We're all one crisis away from the line. It's all of us. It's our human condition. And we try to make these lines and say, no, that's them, and I'm over here. But Thanksgiving angels, when they just see as deeply as they can the face of the person in front of them, that's my face. That's me. And all the judgment begins to melt away. All the arguing, all the fighting begins to melt away. And in that moment, the stranger becomes a neighbor. And the neighbor, with all their complications, like my complications, becomes a beloved child of God. And when that happens, the storm begins to abate. Goliath falls into a pile of dust. Intractable problems can be overcome. Intractable problems can be overcome. Baird Hall can turn into this amazing community center. And so the good news in the midst of our troubled world, the good news is we don't live in the Valley of Elah. We're not in the storm of the Lake of Galilee. We're here. And some of this transformation, this speaking peace into the heart of the world, is happening right here, right now. Can that be kind of like a hologram? Where if it can happen here, it can happen there, it can happen there, it can transform the whole world. Is this what our friend Jesus is doing in many, many places? Getting people to come together, building this web of connection in small, subtle ways that don't get into the media, that don't get into the halls of Congress, and yet is starting to weave things together and eventually will get to those places because this web has a possibility of transforming everything. This is what Jesus, I think, is up to. It's what David was up to. And so that's the wisdom being offered us. The good news is we're not stuck in that valley. We're not stuck on that lake. We're on a journey together into the wisdom of God. May we look and see and follow faithfully this summer season. Amen.